Good morning. Happy to be here today. Today's story of Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch is a real gem. It's a real delight to get to dig into it, research it, and preach about it to you. It's a beautiful story, powerful and meaningful, and in fact, I feel like every verse and almost every word is packed with meaning, which could take forever to unpack it. But we will go back over the story a little bit and play a little bit of Bible hide and seek as we look for connections. I know I'm not the only Bible geek in the house today, so I hope you will play with me. Today's story is about an Ethiopian eunuch. It really pains me that he doesn't have a name, so let's call him Simon. Someone in the 4th century suggested that that was his name, with zero proof, but it's good enough. Let's call him Simon. So our guy, possibly Simon, is a court official of the Candace, the High Queen of Ethiopia. It sounds like he's her treasurer. So to begin with, Ethiopia, I wonder, does anybody know another Bible story about a person from Ethiopia? Call it out if you do. Queen Makeda. The Queen of Sheba? We're talking about the same woman, the Queen of Sheba. Possibly the most powerful woman mentioned in the Bible. She makes a long pilgrimage to come visit King Solomon in the temple he builds in Jerusalem. And he asks him question after question, and he answers them all, leaving her awestruck. And according to some less traditional sources, she may even have gone back to Ethiopia pregnant. So very, very, very auspicious visitor. And from very far away, Ethiopia in those days, not just to the biblical characters, but to other Greek and Roman texts, Ethiopia was the end of the earth, and they probably had it stand for Africa in general. And the phrase, from India to Ethiopia, meant literally everywhere to the people who lived in the small middle parts of that span. And like the Queen of Sheba, these Ethiopian people were seen in these texts, not just biblical, but Greek and Roman, as super exotic foreigners. And I'm sorry to report that the very similar racism was at play back then, in that Ethiopians, or anyone with black skin, were seen as exotic and dangerous and sexy. Does anybody know any other Ethiopians in the Bible? No. So the Ethiopian army shows up a couple times, and in one point, the Ethiopian army is said to have 1 million soldiers, literally 1 million, I doubt, but we get the point, they're scary. And that's nearly it. There's one more very minor Ethiopian character who is a eunuch in the court of King Zedekiah, who is notable for having saved the life of the prophet Jeremiah. Which brings us to the other thing we know about our guy, possibly Simon, in today's story. He is also a eunuch. And for those of you who may have forgotten or not yet learned what this very hard to spell word means, a eunuch is a man who has been castrated and who cannot have children. Bible hide and seek game number 2. Does anybody know any other Bible stories that have a eunuch in them? No. Perhaps a famous queen who has a eunuch for a servant? Perhaps a queen off in Persia? Anybody? Queen Esther! Spoiler. The story of Queen Esther. That was one of my favorite stories growing up because we had this really beautiful illustrated version. And she's a Jewish woman who is in exile in Persia, and she's taken to the king's palace to have a kind of trial period to choose the next queen. And now there's a eunuch named Haggai who takes care of her and advises her while she's in the palace getting ready for her contest to be chosen as the next queen. And so Haggai is a character in this story who, there's a lot that he did in the illustrated version at any rate. Minor in the Bible, but you know, he's in legend, he became quite a character. So since Haggai is a eunuch, they thought of him as not a real man, so they put him in charge of the women. And he could move freely between men and women because they didn't see him as a risk. So in the illustrated book I had, they added some nice details. Haggai knew the king very well. And he was an expert in perfumes and jewelry and a really skilled hairstylist. And he was a friend to Esther. He coached her. He taught her what the king might like. And when it was her turn to spend a night with the king, instead of getting her all fancied up in rich clothing and jewelry, he sent her in with just a single string of pearls and a plain dress because her beauty spoke for itself. And Haggai was right. Esther became the queen, and he remained her servant. I don't think there are any other stories about eunuchs in the Bible. Haggai is our main character there. But we know that Jewish laws had restrictions against them worshiping in the temple, and we know that they were always, in the ancient Near East, they were outside of the family unit. They could be powerful, but never really hold that power, and they almost always were servants, even if high-ranking servants. There is a verse about eunuchs in the prophet Isaiah. In today's story, our guy, possibly Simon, is riding along in the chariot, and he's reading from Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, and he reads from a messianic portion, but if he had continued for a few chapters, he would have come to the verse where it says that it promises a bright future to people who traditionally couldn't have one. There is a section that promises children to the barren woman, and a section promising foreigners that they will not be separate from Israel. And to the eunuchs, the prophet promises a monument and an everlasting name better than sons and daughters. So let's move on. Let's look for more connections. I hope you like this game. I think it's kind of fun. So today's story takes place in a chariot moving along the road. Our guy Simon is riding along, and Philip like runs up to the chariot to jump in and join him. Seems odd, seems impractical, so I wonder what the chariot could really mean there. And I wonder if you know any other Bible stories that involve chariots or take place in chariots. Oh, well, come on, there's the Egyptian army that chases the, you know, out into the desert, and they're, you know, with their whips and everything. Okay, there's a lot of armies in chariots. That happens a lot. There's also the prophet Elijah, anyone? Who disappears in a chariot of fire? Yes, yes. And then later, his successor, the prophet Elisha, also has a chariot story. A foreign official, an enemy, really, official, comes to him in a chariot asking for a cure for his leprosy. And Elisha sends him back down the road in his chariot and tells him to stop at the River Jordan and wash, and he will be cured. So chariots can be this hostile thing, but they also are a symbol for the prophet, a symbol of power. Okay, we got a few connections in place. We've got Ethiopia, we've got eunuchs, we've got the chariot on the road. Now, bear with me while I ask one more question, one more hide and seek for another story in the Bible. This is a convoluted one and definitely a leading question. Does anybody know of another story in the Bible that, like today's story, takes place after Christ's resurrection and takes place on a road, and there's a disciple traveling on the road? Maybe he has another guy with him, but there's a disciple traveling on the road, and they're going away from Jerusalem on that road, and someone joins them on that road, and they keep traveling on that road, and they talk about scriptures while they're traveling on that road, and they stop, and they celebrate a sacrament, and then one of them disappears into thin air, and the other ones go running to tell the good news. Anybody know a story like that? So a lot of you are really smiling, and a couple of you are looking baffled, so the game is over. The story of the road to Emmaus, where the disciples, right after Jesus' resurrection, are walking, and it says Jesus himself comes and talks with them and explains the scriptures to them, and then they celebrate communion, and it says their eyes were opened in the breaking of the bread. That story is a total parallel to today's story of Philip and our guy Simon, where they travel, they talk about the scriptures, and they celebrate a sacrament, and poof, the moment is over. It's as if it was the whole thing was a magical interlude, and then real life starts again. Well, my conclusion from playing this Bible hide-and-seek game with you is that the story of Philip and possibly Simon is far more than just a story. It is a poem of stories, of Ethiopians and chariots and sacraments. It is a constellation of stories, a fishing net full of story threads all wrapping together. Wow. When they interviewed me, the Associate Pastor Nominating Committee asked me to give them a one-sentence summary of a recent sermon. I shared with them, and I will share with all of you, that almost all of my sermons start by talking about how the Bible story is weird and baffling, but as we continue to wonder about it, we find it's also really amazing. So if you only typically stay awake for the first half of my sermons, you will hear this message in different forms as I invite you again and again to stand in awe of these beautiful, powerful, complex stories that make up our sacred scriptures. If the only thing you get from my sermons is a moment of saying to yourself, wow, I think I need to read that story again, I will not be disappointed. Today's story is amazing because it changes the arc of early Christian history. The Ethiopian Orthodox Church is ancient, and it traces its origin to this story, where the eunuch went back rejoicing and told everybody the news. And in a lot of ways, the Ethiopian Orthodox Church stands outside of all the dramatic scandals and splits of European church history. While we pay attention to the contests and conflicts and the spread of the church to Rome and Constantinople and throughout Europe, in the meantime, a devout and thriving church dwelled in Ethiopia with a different set of religious practice, closer, in fact, to Judaism, but still undeniably Christian, and just stood by itself while the rest of the drama took place elsewhere. Today's story is amazing because it hits close to the heart. Our guy Simon may be powerful, he may be a treasurer for the Candace, but in every other way, he is crushed under stacks of overlapping discrimination. He is a foreigner. He is black. He looks different. He is of ambiguous gender. He is a sexual minority. And then he wishes to worship as part of the Jewish people, but is unable to even enter the temple grounds. He is cut off in so many ways. He is cut off from family, from ethnicity, from religion, and from status. And he talks with Philip as they travel in the chariot, and he asks this question with trembling. Is there anything to prevent me from being baptized? Is there anything that stands in the way of me joining you? Am I welcome? Even me? That question cuts deep for those who have asked that question, who have dared to ask that question with the same trembling. Gay and lesbian, transgender and queer Christians have been asking, is there anything to prevent me from joining? Is there anything to prevent me from being ordained? Thank God our church has moved forward. But in other churches that have not, so many people have stopped even asking this question because it hurts too much to be told you cannot. Today's story is amazing because the answer is no, flat out no. There is nothing to prevent you from joining us. I think of a powerful song that the East Bay Gay Men's Chorus sings, a Christmas song, a song about a person standing on the steps of the church, wondering whether he will be welcome, hearing the choir inside sing, "Noel, Noel, Noel." I'm standing at the church door, but no, I'd better leave. I should find another way to spend Christmas Eve. But then the doors fly open, I can hardly believe. Your heart is all you need to bring Noel, Noel, Noel. That hits close to the heart, and it should. And just one more reason why this story is amazing. This goes out to you skeptics. Back to Bible geekery for a moment. My professors taught me not just to accept the words in my English Bible, but to check the Greek, and even more, to check the various manuscripts known in Greek. We're talking papyruses and codices and Dead Sea Scrolls and the like. And most of these ancient manuscripts have Philip say absolutely nothing when asked if there was anything to prevent our guy Simon from being baptized. One manuscript doesn't, however, and I know what happened. There was a scribe sitting there copying out the story, and he saw that Philip didn't say anything, and he got very uncomfortable with that. He said, "This couldn't be right." So he put some words into Philip's mouth and writes, "If you believe in Jesus Christ, you may be baptized." Guess what, guys? That was not part of the story. And that scribe couldn't deal with the radical openness and acceptance in this story. Your heart is all you need to bring. It is a scandal. This radical openness is a stumbling block to many. But to those who are cut off from family, those who are excluded from religion, those are the very people who become the Christian family, a family tied not by blood but by water, not the kind of family where people look like each other, but the kind of family where the waters of baptism wash away those name tags people have placed on us, the painful names and insults are washed away, and where our only name is, "You belong to God." You are welcome here. You are welcome here today. Hear it again. You are welcome here. Hear it over and over until you know it and you believe it deep inside. And when you know and believe that you are welcome here, it's your turn to take it to someone else. Not everyone gets to stand up here and proclaim the good news, but everyone gets to welcome somebody, and everybody gets to be the good news. It's time to break your clique of friends, time to expand your family, time to bring in new people and open the doors, because this is the Christian story. You have been welcomed here. Now go and do likewise. Amen.